Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. It's a weird Monday podcast because we just had a USC football game last night. The Trojans defeat the Washington State Cougars on a Sunday early evening, 38-13. We're going to talk about that with the coach, Harvey Hyde. We got some breaking news as far as the NCAA transfer portal goes with USC, but the Trojans are now 4-0, sitting atop the Pac-12 South in the driver's seat, not just to win the division, but also host the Pac-12 championship game with all the turmoil that's going on in the Pac-12 North. We're going to talk about all that with the coach, Harvey Hyde. If you have any questions or comments for us, podcast at uscfootball.com. That's the email address. Or if you'd rather call or text us, we got a couple of voicemails to get to today. 424-254-9141 is the number. And if you have an Apple podcasting app on any of your devices, please subscribe to the Peristyle Podcast, but also leave us a 5-star rating and any kind of review with comments, feedback, suggestions. Any questions you have, we can bump up to the top of the list, but we really appreciate that because it helps to grow the show. And we're kind of winding down the season, which is crazy that, you know, USC's 4-0, but the season's coming to an end here pretty soon. We're going to talk about all of that with the coach, Harvey Hyde. He is on the line right now. Coach, how are you doing?
Ryan, I'm doing great, and I want to say happy holidays to everyone out there. It seems as though this football season took a while to get started, and it's really going through quickly now. All of a sudden, we have the SC-UCLA game, finally, and then we have the following weekend to see who's going to be playing in the conference championship game. So it's been a different type of year, not only in athletics and sports, but everything, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be any more different than what we've seen. This was the first week we've had all six Pac-12 games go through, so sort of knock on wood for that. The only delay was obviously USC playing Washington State on a Sunday late afternoon, early evening. That was definitely something to see there, and you know, watching that one was different than what we've seen in the past, Coach. But we want to get to all that. We have we actually have a little bit of a breaking news. Former 5-star prospect, inside linebacker Palaie Naoteote from Bishop Gorman High School, missed the last couple of games with being in concussion protocol. USC's pretty thin at inside linebacker and played actually Talanoa Hufanga and a little bit of Drake Jackson there in the game against Washington State because Raylan Goforth was also out with his foot sprain. But now, as of this morning, Palaie Naoteote has entered the NCAA transfer portal. It was being reported that USC's not pulled any kind of financial pledge to Palaie, so they could allow him to come back. I think USC would be open to that. That's something that Clay Helton has always been open to. He's not someone, a lot of times coaches, when someone enters the portal, they shut the door and that player's out for good. So I think USC's still holding out hope that he will come back because USC is very thin at the inside linebacker spot. So we don't have a lot of details of what's going on with this yet. It just kind of happened. But, Coach, I want to get your thoughts on that before we jump into anything else.
Well, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed for the program at USC. I'm disappointed for the kid. The kid was a 5-star coming out of Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas. I watched him play in high school. He's a great player, just a great player. I'm not sure that the USC utilized him as far as in the right position. I don't think he's a weak side linebacker. If anything, he's a middle linebacker. He's a guy that likes to get after people. He's a rush type of guy. I watched him rush a quarterback in high school, and he gets after it. And I think you've heard me talk about it all the time as far as putting players in the right positions where they can be successful. And I think the two linebackers that have come in and played, I'm not talking about Drake Jackson playing linebacker inside. I'm talking about the ones that have come in and played have done an outstanding job. They got after the football. They flew around. They did some good plays. And you know, you get discouraged. He's had some injuries, too, along with his concussion. So he's down. Expected bigger things. The bigger things didn't come. So he's probably looking for another place, and I don't think he'll come back. I mean, I think that your door is always open, but unless they talk to him about a position change or why he should come back, I think he's gone.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Coach. You know, his brother, too, was, you know, part of the recruiting class. That you know, that seems like that could potentially fall apart also. But, you know, USC's pretty thin at the inside linebacker spot. And we've seen people have differing opinions, I guess you could say, with medical staff from USC before, where players were held out and didn't feel that they should have been. I'm not saying that's the case here, but it's taken him a while to come back from this, you know, concussion. To be, you know, it's been, you know, about a month, I think, since he had the concussion. So is there an issue there? I don't know. It's hard to say. So we don't really know a lot at this point, but that's something to look forward. You know, we'll check out, but only a couple games left. You saw, you know, Talanoa have a pretty huge game playing up closer to the line of scrimmage. They've used a lot of dime packages, but let's get to the game a little bit, Coach. It was an offensive explosion in the first quarter. Keaton Slovis had four touchdown passes, all of them to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Amon-Ra St. Brown had zero touchdown catches through the first three games. He gets four in the first quarter of this game, so it ties a USC record for touchdowns in a game. He didn't get another one, but that's, you know, he ends up Keaton Slovis had five. He ended up throwing another one to Tyler Vaughns. But big offensive explosion, then is sort of like kind of cruised to, you know, the end here and you know, going on to a 38-13 win. But get your overall thoughts on it. I know we have a bunch of questions and we'll address some different things, but get your thoughts, Coach, on this game.
Well, first of all, congratulations to the Trojans. Always a big win when you win 38-13. As far as to record setting, St. Brown, congratulations to you. That was quite an explosion in the first quarter for you. And I saw him look up at the record board. And he couldn't believe it himself, or not the record board, but the video board. He couldn't believe it himself. And congratulations to him. You know, I'm into stats, but I'm into winning, and I'm into how you play the game and all the different things that go along with it. So I want to say I thought the two offensive linemen, the freshman linemen, I'm going to be positive on all these things as far as the good things that happened. And I'll also talk about the things I have some concerns about. I thought the two kids, Ford and Monahan, I thought had a pretty good game. I watched them a lot. I thought they had mobile. They were mobile. They moved around good for their first game. They talked a lot with Tucker and the other offensive line. They really communicated. So I thought the three inside guys who weren't regular starters did a great job as far as coming in at this late notice and playing. I think that the guy that sets the tone on the offensive side of the football is Drake London. I think he has made the football team, as far as the receiver portion of it, a tougher group of guys. He's a leader by example. When he catches the football, you got to kill him to knock him down. I think that sort of spread throughout the receivers as far as all of them fighting more, as far as the extra yardage and so on. So I think really he's been a great example as far as what he's done for the receivers. I think they have a great group of receivers. As far as Keaton's concerned, I thought he had a game that was good enough to win. Didn't have to set all the statistics, throw for 500 yards and all the rest, which he didn't do. But they had found a way to win, and they did win. So I thought that was good. I would have got him out of the game a lot earlier and given Matt Fink some experience, because you've got to have somebody get some experience as far as behind you. And probably the reason they didn't do that, they're more into stats on how many yards he can get and all this and that, rather than, you know, bringing your football team along. Very, very disappointed in the running portion of the football team, as I am every week when I talk with all of us. 20 carries, 5 yards net. Yeah, I know every time he gets sacked, they deduct it from the net yardage, but they also give him yardage when he throws a 1 yard pass and the guy runs 50 yards. It goes towards the passing stat. But very, very disappointed in all the rotations of the backs, and really no thought of having any type of running game. Or when they change the defense up in the second half and they get away from the man coverage, which they should have never ran against USC, they can't match up Washington State with USC whatsoever athletically. Then the second half, the score was 7-3, which I was very disappointed that the Trojans couldn't finish in a stronger manner and work on their running game, but they have no philosophy on the running game as far as what they're doing or trying to do or whatever. So on that note, I might say, too, I expected that victory. On a lot of shows I did, I said if they didn't win and cover, that isn't getting it done. Because if you plan on playing Alabama, Ohio State, Iowa, Notre Dame, you got to be able to beat Washington State. I don't know if there's a player, and those players, don't get me wrong, they played hard, Washington State. I felt sorry for them at times. They were outmanned. I don't think there was a player on Washington State's team that was offered a scholarship at USC. So I would say my X was bigger than their O, and I should do what I did in a more fashionable way, in a more dominant way than what really happened. So time of possession was more Washington State. I'm not a stat. Maybe I shouldn't give you all the stats because I'm not a stat guy. I'm a performance guy. Did you use your players in the right place? How about Drake Jackson? I've been talking about that every week. A freshman All-American, potential first-round draft choice, tackling on the tackle list, one assist. Now, here's one of your most valuable players on defense. I talk about putting him in a position where he can be a force and make a difference. One assist. You got a guy 6'5", 250 or whatever he is, dropping back into coverages. I just don't know what's happening there. So I'll get that all out, and then we'll continue on. And congratulations to all of the fans and parents that listen. A big victory. You're in a position now to play UCLA and go to the championship game. And we don't know who we're playing as far as from the north. Could be Washington, could be Oregon. So we'll see what happens.
So you mentioned Drake Jackson a little bit and the disappointing performance there. What about a guy like Talanoa Hufanga, who ends up, you know, having to play that Mike linebacker spot with Raylan Goforth out? He gets an interception, almost returns it for a touchdown. He leads the team in tackles. He has a sack. Guy like that, where, you know, you're moving him around and just putting him in a different spot, and he's still out there making plays. What did you think of his performance?
I thought it was absolutely fabulous. I tweeted out, I forget when, second or third quarter, that he's the most valuable defensive player in the Pac-12. There's no question in my mind. He plays with an attitude. He's a leader. He's around the football. Every play is around the football, okay? They ticked him off a little bit earlier in the game when he tried to help up a Washington State player, and the guy turned around and sort of shoved him, and he was trying to really help him. And after that, it was all over with, okay? Shouldn't have done that. And he just did a great job. He's the most valuable defensive player in the Pac-12.
And for a guy that goes from safety to linebacker, like, is that, I mean, how would you feel? Is that a hard move to make for just a game like this?
Well, when you're a football player, and he's a football player, okay, there's some people that are football players and are big and are fast and so on, but this guy doesn't make any difference to him. You could put him at a defensive end and he'd do a great job because he plays his motor never stops. He plays. It's a difference. But, you know, in his position that he plays, he's making 15 tackles anyway every week. He's on the line of scrimmage hitting everybody. So you put him in there where he has a better opportunity to make more tackles and cause more havoc and rush the passer and do all the things he does. And he's a great leader. So, you know, I would say he's the leader on the defensive side of the football 100%. You better play hard if you're playing with him, otherwise he'll let you know it. He leads by example. Just like London does on the offensive side of the football. Lead by example. There's no rah-rah much going on. This is the type of kid he is, and he'll play anything. He's coaches put me in, and I think that's the type of player you want if you can get him at every position.
Yeah.
And by the way, let me mention this. I thought the secondary really played hard, too. I really think they played hard because of his leadership in that area, too. I thought the guys, you know, they could cover the Washington State players because they didn't have great team speed or size, but they play hard on the defensive side of the football. That's what I like. They're playing hard. I mean, you could, you know, sometimes I don't like some of the things they're doing, but they play hard. Those kids really play hard. And another thing, and I don't know if it's from the coach or not, but when a defensive back goes down, the other secondary guys come and circle him and around him because they care about him. That's showing another little extra thing if you watch that. And they watch him, they make sure he's okay, they check with him, they help him up, or whatever. Now, that's what you call caring, and that's how you develop a team.
Yeah, that was for Greg Johnson went down a couple of times. And the one time it looked – he ended up coming back in the game, but it looked kind of serious, and the whole secondary surrounded him. So I thought that was a good sign. But, yeah, with Craig Nivar and Dante Williams, people talk about the recruiting aspect, but they seem to have these guys playing at a high level.
They are. They're playing at a good level, and they're getting out of them what they should be, and they're getting better every week. If you watch them play, Steele's getting better as far as his hands. You know, everybody's getting better. And, again, you have to evaluate the talent they're playing against, too. It's not Alabama. But, again, you've got to evaluate progress, and that's what I'm looking at.
You talked about the run game a little bit, so you know, I think we'll get some questions and stuff. On that, you know, 5 yards rushing overall, coach. I mean, you saw that offensive explosion, you know, 5 touchdowns in the first half, but it was only 287 yards total offense for this team, which we've seen before them score, you know, USC score this many points getting like 470 yards of offense. So on one end, they, you know, they were more efficient, I guess, with the ball as far as like when they, you know, they got in the red zone, they were scoring points. And then they sort of kind of took their foot off the gas in the second half. But what do you make of something like that, where the yardage isn't anywhere near what the totals have been in other games, but their points were right up there?
Well, I don't think they took their foot off the gas, Ryan. They didn't do the right things as far as what they should do, what the adjustments that Washington State did. But they did. And when you talk about the stats, look at the field positions, onside kick in the second half, the turnovers they got. They didn't have to make long drives. They had good field position. The defense gave them good field position. Once I think they got the ball on the 13-yard line or the 10-yard line. One time they got down there on the 13-yard line or whatever, and they couldn't run the football in. One time they threw a fade to Jackson. I don't know. And the other time they had to kick a field goal. So, production – and stats, I'm not into that, but the defense gave them great field position. And when you have that field position and you get in the red zone and so on, you should be able to score. And they did that, and times they didn't do that. And, it's going to be a concern down the road if you, it depends. Do you want to beat Alabama? Like I said earlier, Ohio State and all these teams, do you have the number two running back in the country, Stephen Carr? And correct me if I'm wrong, 2 or 3. And Harris is at Alabama, tearing them up, running the football, and they pass the football. They do it all. And we got a running back like Carr, and you got Steps, and you got Malapiai and others. And 5 yards, it's not the kids, not the players. It's what you're doing with the players and what your philosophy is. As far as with your offensive running game, there isn't any philosophy. So that's what's hurting USC overall, and you will not play on the championship level without a running game. And I keep saying that every single week. You hear Urban Meyer say it. You hear everybody say it. But I guess at USC, nobody cares.
I mean, I don't know if no one cares.
I wouldn't go there if I was a running back. I wouldn't go there if I was a running back.
It's tough. I mean, Clay Helton talked the first couple of weeks about Alabama and LSU. They have these prolific passing attacks, but they also run the ball for 170 yards a game. USC had been doing that, so they felt like that's what USC is going to continue to do. Utah shuts them down, but Utah's got a great defensive front. Washington State doesn't. And they shut them down. So, yeah, I think there's some concern there, Coach, where you wouldn't have seen Alabama or LSU last year, or Alabama this year. LSU's pretty garbage right now. But those teams can throw the ball over the place, but they would still run consistently. There wasn't teams that were shutting them down. I think there's, you know, this is one of those things where Clay Helton talks about something and then it doesn't come to fruition. To me, Coach, it felt like USC just happened to run for 170 yards or whatever it was in the first couple games. And then, so that's what they're saying. Well, that's what it's going to be like, but it wasn't. And I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you're concerned about that. I would be too. Some people say it doesn't matter. This is a passing offense, but when you're going to tell me that you got to run the football for 170 yards a game, you can't run for five against Washington State.
Well, when you run against when you get 170 yards in the Southeastern Conference, that's a little bit different than getting 170 yards in the Pac-12. Okay. Currently at the Pac-12, the highest-ranked team in the country is 16th, and that's USC. There's not another team in the top 25. So evaluate what you're playing against and where you got your 170 yards and the teams that haven't won a football game, okay? So you got to put everything together on who you are and what you expect to be and what type of performance you want. And you look at if you do have the possibility and potential of doing that because of what you do and your philosophy offensively, just like when they ask about the philosophy of going under center or having some type of idea of short yardage offense on the run or quarterback sneak, well, the offensive coordinator says, we don't do that here. Well, the head football coach's responsibility is to say, hey, I'm the head football coach here, and we are doing that here, if he has any knowledge of what you need to do as far as watching other teams play and what you need to do on short yardage offense as far as, you know, there's certain different things. Now, I'm just giving you my side of it. I know a lot of people out there saying, coach, you're too tough on them. They won 38-13. Well, I have a different level of how I look at USC. I look at USC as one of the premier college football programs in the country. It should be on the same top 10 list every single year. But every year it seems to drop down a little bit, and it's got to be for a reason. You can't lose that edge you've had. You can't lose that edge, and right now that edge is going. When you look at the top 25 teams in the Pac-12 and you have one team, what would you think people will think? And now you only have four bowl games left for Pac-12 teams to go to. But they just dropped the SoFi game in the SoFi Stadium, which was a Pac-12 team. And the Las Vegas Bowl, they dropped that. Sun Bowl, they dropped that. Holiday Bowl, they dropped that. So, you know, you've got to be productive, and you've got to look at what image and where we want to be at USC and how do we get there and all the different things. This is just my philosophy, and if I'm upsetting a lot of people out there, and if you're a parent out there, I apologize, but I'm just telling you, this is what you have to do to win national championships as far as playing on that level, which I think USC should be playing at.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. This is kind of a perfect encapsulation of USC football lately, because you see that first quarter, which was an explosion, and you see the potential, right? This team is really good athletes. This is where they should be playing all the time. And then it sort of falls off after that. And that's kind of like what you have, the something that you should have a really good taste in your mouth following this game. And there's fans that even like hate Clay Helton and thinks he's the worst coach ever. Can't but smile at that. Like, wow, that's pretty impressive. But then he gives them ammunition against Clay Helton again by, you know, getting outscored in the second half and not being able to run the football. So there's always going to be something that you can kind of complain about. This was a real opportunity to put together a perfect, you know, 60-minute effort, and it just failed. And I think that allows some of the Clay Helton critics to get even louder because, see, I told you, that was just the talent. That was just the players playing in the first quarter. And then when coaching got involved, that's what you saw. I don't know what you think about that, Coach.
Yeah, they you got playmakers making plays. Hufanga, St. Brown, London. These are playmakers. These are guys that when they get the football, they make a play. They make the effort. And they make a play that's 2 or 3 yards, a bigger play, or whatever it might be. These are playmakers. Now, put those playmakers into a rhythm and a system that's complete as far as the running game and the passing game. And if they give you the run, you force them out of the other coverages because you can run the ball. You'll jam it down their throat. If you're trying to run the clock out in a football game in the second half, you run the football and the clock keeps going and you work on your running game and you just wear them out and finally you win the football game. They don't do that. They're still throwing the ball around, but they can't make any yardage because they don't have any reason to make any yardage. They have no outside perimeter running game. They have no series. They don't have any bootlegs. They don't have any play action. They don't have anything. don't call that little ride of play action, that zone read or whatever they do, because the quarterback never carries it out, and Kendon never carries the football, never. And I watch every other great team play in the country, and the quarterback is running all over the field, scoring touchdowns, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. That makes a difference who it is. But at USC, it's a different type of attitude, different type of philosophy as far as on the offensive side of the football. And, of course, I don't set that philosophy, but I said from day one, that's a great offense for a team or an area that doesn't have great players, that just tries to win a few games. Why do you think Mike Leach left Washington State? He left there because he could get as much as he could out of it, and now he got another job down in the Southeastern Conference for twice the pay, but he's having trouble winning down there because of his philosophy. So, you know, you got to look at the whole picture when you look at this. That'd be great for a school that needs to do something different to cause problems for teams that play them. They try to prepare for them in 3 or 4 days.
One last thing, Coach, before we get to questions. I wanted to ask you, it's a weird stat, and we don't get the stats a lot, but USC has not scored a touchdown in the third quarter this year. It's been a problem over the years, but not having a single touchdown in the third quarter. Why would you think something like that is, or just from watching this team, why do you think that would be? Is that just like an anomaly, or is there an actual problem there?
I really don't know, and I don't have an answer on that. You'd have to go back. I think you'd have to go back and cut up the tapes and watch every third quarter and see exactly what adjustments were made at halftime. And did you adjust to certain things? Did you have penalties? You didn't score? Whatever. I can't answer that because I don't know. So there's been four games, so there have been four third quarters they haven't scored. So I don't know why or have any reason, but if you wanted to find that out, somebody would have to do that.
Would you, like, when you were a head coach, like if one of your assistant coaches came to you and said, hey, coach, you know, we haven't scored a touchdown in the third quarter yet. Like, what would your reaction be? Like, okay, I want to go look at, see why that is, or would that be a concern at all? Or does it not really matter? It's just, you know, it's just one quarter of a game.
Well, if he was on the offensive side, it was the offensive coordinator, I'd tell him, you better get your shit together. Because I'm going to tell you what, I was wondering the same thing. I was telling them, I'm glad you came to me before I could come in and rip your ass. Okay. That's what I would tell him. Don't come in and ask me. I'd go in and tell him that, because there's those type of things shouldn't happen, but they do happen. And, you know, there's so many stats today that everybody has a stat on anything. But if I was there, I'd find out why and look at it and have somebody break it down. You only got 26 coaches on your staff. I don't know what they all do, assistant to the assistant, that I'd have somebody do a study on that and break it all down and bring it into my office. And then I'd bring my offensive coordinator in and my defensive coordinator in, and I'd lay it all out and say, now what's happening here?
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we got a bunch of questions, so we'll get to them back in a minute.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. We got a text from Ian in Santa Clarita. I think he sent this actually before the game on Sunday. But he said, watching the Oregon State game left me both feeling happy as USC's rival in the North got handed a loss, while at the same time also knowing that this is what the Pac-12 does best, beat each other up. That got worse this past weekend, Ian. he said, but okay, my question is, do you guys see the way Oregon State's offensive line dominated in the trenches against the much more talented defensive line of Oregon, a team that I believe ranked 12th nationally and, you know, according to PFF? This makes one think that it's obviously great to get 4- and 5-star linemen, but look what you can do with 2- and 3-star linemen if they're simply coached up better and practice physically up front. Just a thought, Ian in Santa Clarita.
Well, yeah, you know, coaching is a big part of it. Bringing players along and developing them is a big part of it. But also, where they rank, what, 12th in the country in defense against the rush, against who? Who have they played? Now, if they'd have played other teams in the country, I think they were supposed to open with Michigan. Well, Michigan didn't end up with anything. I think Oregon was supposed to open up with Ohio State. We'd have seen what their defensive front would have been like against them, what the stat might have been. So stats, like I say, you know, don't say much. But, you know, Oregon's not really a good football team. I told you that 6 weeks ago. I told you that when I saw them when they opened the season, whatever it was, 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I watched them play in their opening game against, who was it, Stanford, I think it was? Yeah. And they were down at half, and I watched them play Washington State. Now, Washington State gave them a battle if they were up at halftime. So, you know, and then they got beat this week, Oregon. So they're a so-so team. They're struggling, as Washington is struggling. Washington gets beat this last week, too, by who? Stanford beat them. So, you know, you got to look at stats and who they're playing. Now, if they're going to play Notre Dame, what do you think your stats might have been on the run or your defense? I mean, look who you're playing, and then you can lead the country in a lot of areas. But this year, fortunately, for the Pac-12, a lot of those big-time games did not enter the schedule of the Pac-12. Or I'm afraid to say this, but I think the Pac-12 may have been embarrassed as far as playing Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, some of the games that were scheduled for the Pac-12.
Yeah, no, it could have been. It doesn't look like the Pac-12 is playing at a high level right now, but it is the COVID, you know, they started later than everybody. So there's a lot of
factors. That's true.
There's a lot of factors.
That's true, but everybody they played started the same thing. Who have they played that had an advantage on them?
Yeah, no, I mean, for USC, for sure. I mean, like Oregon, losing to Oregon State, and then coming back and losing to a winless Cal team doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I know.
It's very strange. So it's the Pac-12, Coach. It's Pac-12 in 2020, which Pac-12 all by itself is crazy. Our buddy Curtis from Moreno Valley, he says, my team, how I feel. Don't get it twisted. I'm positive about my team, but I wish we blew out every team we played. But I played the game and coached it. A less talented team can beat you if the game circumstances are right. You have to take those ugly wins and hope we improve. Many NCAA teams wish they were undefeated right now. That, you know, he might have said this in before the Washington State game. I'm not sure when this was sent in. I wouldn't say this was an ugly win, but you would have liked to see, you know, you blew them out, you know, beat a team by 25 points. Just didn't really do much in the second half. But right now, you're not going to make the playoff. I know Curtis talks about a win is a win. You know, I think being undefeated, there's something to be said for that. Like USC was really close to not being undefeated a couple of times being down in the fourth quarter. But at this point, I think it's great. You want to try to go undefeated. You want to try to win the Pac-12, maybe go to the Fiesta Bowl and like salvage something out of the season. Coach, you mentioned all the other bowls that are getting canceled. It doesn't really matter if USC ends up winning the Pac-12, they'll still go to a great bowl. It might hurt Oregon or Washington. Maybe they don't get a bowl like they were going to before. But if you take care of your business, you have to decide what kind of value you're going to put on like a 6-0 Pac-12, you know, championship season. But whatever. I mean, at this point, that's all you can really do. So I'm not faulting USC for trying to do that at all. I think it makes sense.
I agree with you. I think that if they can get to a bowl game, I think it'd be great. Winning the Pac-12, I think it would be great. And I think that's what the goal is, and that's what it should be. And that's a championship game as far as they're playing UCLA. If somehow Utah beat Colorado on Friday night, that would eliminate Colorado. And if USC goes undefeated and beats UCLA, they'll be playing either Washington or Oregon or somebody from the north. And there's no doubt in my mind they should be able to win that game and be 6 or 7-0 or whatever it is at the end. 6 would be 4, 5, 6-0. Yes, they play a team from the Big Ten or the Southeastern Conference or somebody, which would have twice as many games almost played and practice and all of the above, which I'm not quite sure how pretty that would be, but it gives them an opportunity for exposure to get in a game, and I think that's what you play for, the Pac-12 championship first, and then see if you can get a New Year's Day game or something around New Year's.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Curtis, for that one. We have a crazy Pac-12 football idea from Frank in Sacramento. How about we do some makeup game action at the end of the season with a North-South All-Star game? This could be for all players with NFL potential, Frank in Sacramento. What do you think about an All-Star game for the Pac-12, Coach?
Well, Frank, I think we're searching a little bit, okay? I think that there's too much of a chance of somebody getting injured. I think it would be good. We used to have things like that before. But these kids, as soon as the season's over with, they want to get, if they're a senior, they want to get to, of course, their training, combine people and all these different things and get going. And I just don't think it would go over. But, you know, there's always ideas. I mean, I would probably watch it, but I don't know if that'd be a feasible thing to do. And I don't think they'd ever put it in. I just don't think they'd do it. But, you know, thanks for your ideas.
Yeah, probably not this year especially, because I think this is one of those things where they want to get the season in, but they don't want to do any more than they have to, because you just want it to end and not have to deal with all this testing and everything that's going on all the time. The problem is, Frank, that what would happen is you put the All-Star team together and people are like, could that All-Star team beat Alabama? And you're like, I don't know, maybe not. That would be one of the debates I think the Pac-12 would want to try to avoid. Got a voicemail for you, Coach, about the defense. Here you go.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, Coach. Don from Chicago. Well, finally, our defense is playing with attitude. And I guess Tony Orlando deserves some credit for this. All that was missing was Dawn. So we showed up. We're showing some attitude. Like what I see. Coach, like your views on this. Thanks.
Hey, real quick, well, Coach. He's complimenting Todd Orlando, but then he calls him Tony Orlando. If the defense played poorly, maybe if you want to say that, but when the defense plays well, I don't think you should be insulting the defensive coordinator. It doesn't make sense to me, Don.
I think I've called him Tony before by mistake. Excuse me for saying that, yeah. But I think the defense plays with an attitude. I said earlier in the podcast today that the defense is playing hard. I think they really play hard. They're swarming to the football. They're having fun, it looks like to me, playing defense. They get excited about turnovers and all of the above. My main criticism of the defense is people out of position in some cases and that sort of thing. And I'm going to be real interested to see how they try to defense UCLA as far as with the possible, you know, the reads and zone reads and so on, and how much involved UCLA will want to get their quarterbacks in and carrying the football. They've got two quarterbacks now, so they might want to do that. But I think the whole game plan of UCLA is to run the football, which they're running the football really well. Their offensive line coach has done a great job of coaching them this year, and they're going to want to run the football at USC, keep USC's offense off the field, run the clock down, and try to dominate the game that way. And they're going to try to play a zone defense and invite USC to try to run the football, but they don't believe they can against them because UCLA's defense is really aggressive and they come with a lot of different things. Their kids are real, real quick, and they got a lot of confusing type of coverages and the blitzes and so on. So I think that's got the philosophy you're going to see this week in the UCLA-USC game.
We're gonna talk about that a little bit. We have another voicemail that gets into what UCLA is gonna do. But I would say watching the defense early, Coach, there were some tackling problems with Washington State, you know, in that first drive or so. But I think they shored things up a little bit after that, and maybe some of it's attributed to you had a guy like Talanoa Hufanga playing out of position. They were playing mostly dime. So they were doing something they normally didn't do. And it to me, I thought they did a good job settling into it. And we didn't see, you know, they get Jaden Delora out of the game. They get him benched. He took off to run a couple of times, and it wasn't like he broke up. You know, we saw Grant Gunnell pick up those first downs, you know, and it didn't happen with Jaden Delora. So I thought they did a good job containing him and not know, that's a good safety valve for some of these quarterbacks, right? You get up, I'm not getting through my progressions, I'm not finding the guy I want open, but I have a running lane and I can run and pick up the first down and then start over again. And they weren't giving him those opportunities to run himself and start over again. You know, after that first drive or two, it seemed like the tackling and everything got better for this defense.
Yeah, they improved with their with the success they had. They did, but those scrambles around that he did is not a design type of run. As far as when UCLA, if they're able to run the football inside, and you pull the ball out and you go to the outside after you suck everybody inside, it's going to be very difficult. Very difficult on them because they have not had great success. If you remember, Daniels had 111 yards rushing against them in the first game. And basically, I told some people at Arizona State, not their coaches, but somebody, when I spoke with them, that for some reason they stopped running him. And if they'd have run him more, they'd have won that football game. For some reason, they didn't run him. They called it off. So, you know, you've got a couple of guys that can run the ball pretty good, and it's design type of zone read for them, and they run the ball inside well, and they can run the ball outside. Because if you can't stop the inside run and then you jump in the inside, then they go outside, and they got play action pass off of that. Could cause a problem, but the defense is playing hard, and that's all you can ask the defense to do is to play hard, get to the football, stay in your lanes. Do your responsibility first, and then get to the football. These are the things you talk over and over and over about. Don't make a mistake; it could cost us six. Don't make a stupid penalty; it could cost us more. All these type of things that you preach and preach and preach.
Yeah, we got Jack from New Jersey. He says, "Ryan, I'm being a realist, not a pessimist. The running game is abysmal. I don't care how well the passing game and defense have looked tonight. If you can't run the ball, you can't win a championship. As I wrote to you several days ago, if things don't change, elite running backs will not want to come to USC. I'm happy for the win, but not for the future." Jack from New Jersey. Just to note that the early signing period is less than 2 weeks away, so it's almost here. But yeah, what are your thoughts about from Jack, New Jersey, what he said, Coach?
Well, I think he saw the same thing I did. We're all watching the same game. And for somebody to say, you know, we're not seeing the same thing, they don't know much about football. And that's what really concerns me a lot, because all of us that know football, and I respect all of you out there that are talking about what's wrong with the running game, and everybody else I talk to that are coaches who know something about football, talk about the same things I do as far as the overall philosophy of the running game versus the passing game, and you can be good at both, that there doesn't seem to be any type of caring regarding improving. It's the same thing week after week after week. So maybe we all don't know anything, and maybe they know it all. So that maybe next year we'll see Alabama, Notre Dame, Iowa, and everybody else doing this. And then I'll know that I was wrong.
All right, we got one last email and then one more voicemail for you, Coach. This is Kevin, class of 2008. He calls it convincing win, kinda. Hey, Peristyle team. I'm so frustrated with this team and coaching staff. I love to see the player excitement, but celebrating the interception as we did sends a message like, wow, we can actually play up to our talent. You don't see these antics at the likes of Notre Dame, Alabama, Clemson, even Oregon. Play like you've done this before. Also, how is it that we can score 28 points in the first quarter but struggle to score 10 the rest of the game? I know it's called coaching and making in-game adjustments. He goes, I know it's called coaching and making in-game adjustments. Excuse me for that. Sorry for the short ranty email. I only had 5 minutes to write in, similar to the number of rushing yards USC had. Hair pull. Thanks and fight on. Kevin, class of 2008. So he's saying he's not a pessimist, Coach, but he's a realist.
Well, he needed the vent, okay?
Yeah.
And whenever you need the vent, just write in or call in, and we'll listen to you and listen to you during the game or whatever it is you're venting for yourself, and we'll listen, and we'll agree with you. And if we sometimes disagree with you, it's just because that's why you called us, to get some therapy on it. But, yeah, we all feel the same way on this. I think most of us do. And again, for you that missed the opening part of this podcast, or if you didn't start from the beginning, we congratulated them for their win. We talked about young players playing well. We talked about all the things that went well. And then, you know, and then we sought to get down to the nitty gritty that if I had a staff meeting on a Sunday or immediately following the game, I would bring out these points that I just talked to you about. But I don't know how long I'd be bringing out the points as far as the running game is concerned. And because it doesn't seem to improve and it gets worse, and you people out there, along with myself, become more critical. And I think it hurts the overall image of the football program and recruiting and performance and everything else. So I think that's the best way to explain it.
All right. We got one last question. It's a voicemail. Coach, here you go.
Hi, Ryan. This is a question for both you and Coach Hyde. So anyways, I've been away for a while, but I did say that I would be back. We won 4 straight games, including at least one road victory. So I wasn't quite as disengaged as I was when I was a little more upset last season. But that being said, it's good to have the Trojans earn be another Peristyle podcast phone call, because I missed getting direct feedback on some of my questions for you guys. Anyways, a long intro that says, you know, just kind of reintroducing myself. But that being said, do you think that UCLA will kind of swallow their pride and drop 8 to really try to disrupt USC's passing game? Or do you think they're going to continue with the aggressive style attack that their front 7 has been implementing, you know, that's shown them a lot of success? And if they do go into keep with the aggressive attack, do you think that USC's line will be able to hold up to it? Fight on, Jason, Longhorn Country.
Well, I think that they'll do both. I think that they've seen teams have had a success of dropping 8 because they haven't been able to run the football. They're very quick defensively, and I think they have the confidence that if they run the same running game that they're running, that they could stop it with their front guys. And I think they'll come after them, too, at times. I think they'll come in, show it, come after you. They'll overload a side where they'll have one more guy than you do. And unless the receiver and the quarterback get it together on the reads or what's happening, they'll do it, and they'll disguise it too. Come up, go back, whatever, and try to confuse you and get you out of your rhythm. And if you don't get the first down, as everybody talks about, you know, if you get 2 incomplete passes in a row, everybody knows what you're going to do on second down. If you don't make 5 yards on first down somehow, everybody knows what you're going to do on second down. So, you know, you're sort of dictating to the defense, but the defense knows what you're going to do. So you don't have really the advantage when you're on offense, when you can't get the 5 yards or the 4 yards or have the running game portion of it or fool the linebackers with play action pass. So basically the defense is controlling the game. So, I think they'll mix it up. I like this new coordinator that came in that's working there at UCLA, came in, I think it was from Navy. He's done a great job. The players are really excited about playing football. You can see UCLA's excited. The first winning record that Chip Kelly's had over there. I feel they're very confident. They lost to Colorado, but they made a comeback. What was it, 48-42? They were down 42-14 or something. Came back ever since that time. They've been playing well. They're very confident. They're looking forward to this game. It's in the Rose Bowl. It's too bad, really, that there can't be a crowd there. I think it'd be a great crowd. And I think SC's got to bring their game and be smart. And I just say the same thing. If USC does the right things, they'll win the football game. I haven't seen any odds in the game or anything, but I would guess the number on this game, I'd make 6-8 USC the favorite. Now, I don't know. That's because of personnel. But I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
I think I saw before the USC game, it was like 2 points or something USC was favored by. That could change now because obviously USC, looked impressive in that, at least that first quarter against Washington State. So we'll see what happens there. I think it's a good question because we've seen this. If you haven't watched UCLA, they're a lot more fun to watch. Like Chip Kelly made this team boring. They were just not, they weren't good, you know, and they're more fun on offense to watch now. They're more, definitely more fun on defense. You're seeing them flying around, making plays, but it's been really aggressive, coach. So will they try to do what Utah did last year and play their game? And there's a lot of man coverages in there, or do they back off more or sort of like a mix of like what you said, but they are a defense that's going to put a lot of pressure on you. And if USC still has some issues on the offensive line, I think UCLA can exploit it a little bit better than what Washington State was able to do. So that's going to be something to watch for sure. But this is a very feisty UCLA football team. They kind of had a similar game against Arizona State. They came out and played really well early and then sort of like held on to win. Although that game was a lot closer, obviously. And, you know, UCLA responded when Arizona State did in the second half. Washington State just wasn't in it at that. You know, that was too big of a first quarter for Washington State to overcome. But this is a feisty UCLA squad, and they really do get after it. And you know the Bruins get up for this game. This just looks like a different team from what I've seen from Chip Kelly than really the first couple years he's been there.
Yeah, they look like they're happy. They look like they're having fun. I think he's got his players that he wants there now and have bought into what he's doing. And, you know, he's got a lot of transfer kids, JC kids playing. I think they bought in. They're doing a good job of coaching him, too. And it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a good game, exciting game. I'm looking forward to it. It's a 4:30 kickoff. So it should be exciting for everybody.
It should be. All right, Coach. Well, good stuff. Lots of good questions, good analysis of what we saw out there in the game. It's weird doing this on a Monday where the game just happened last night. But that's 2020, so good stuff there. We get to do our kind of post-game show a little closer to the game than we normally do. But thanks again for coming on, Coach, and be safe, and we'll get your thoughts next week after the Trojans take on the Bruins.
Well, thank you very much. I tell you, it'll be a big week this week, and college football is winding down, but it's exciting. I don't know what I'd do without football, believe me. It's so fun to watch, and I tell you, when you sit back and you watch football, you say, what am I going to do when it's gone? What am I going to do? I tell you, you have football Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, back to Monday again. We've got NFL football Monday, two games today, Monday, one game Tuesday, I think another game Thursday, and then college football. It's unbelievable what we're doing.
Yeah, it's like all the time football, which is great. We're going to miss it when it's gone, but we're got to be happy while it's here. All right, that's the coach, Harvey Hyde. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. We will talk to you next time.
The Rose Bowl Legacy Foundation preserves, protects, and enhances the future of the Rose Bowl Stadium as a national historic landmark. America's Stadium has hosted two Olympic Games, with a third one coming in 2028, two World Cup Finals, five Super Bowls, and the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl, since 1923. It is the epic center of college football and is the most iconic stadium in the world. To learn more about how you can support the Rose Bowl Stadium as it turns 100 years young, visit www.insbire, which spells inspire2022.org.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.